Hey everyone, Graham Talks Pats, episode 2. New England Patriots, what a team they've been through the first 8 weeks. Obviously 6-2 now, obviously able to beat the Browns this past weekend, 32-13. We'll kind of just get right into that Browns game. It's not like it was one of those games where you expect them to have much trouble, just given that the Browns were, you know, 2-5 going into that, obviously 2-6 now. But at the end of the day, like, I still think, you know, with that defense, Myles Garrett, Mason Graham, Malik Collins in that front, Carson Schwesinger being one of the top rookie players, not just on the defensive side of the ball, but just overall, him and Abdul Carter kind of leading the race for the Defensive Rookie of the Year title. That's a good front. Tyson Campbell missed part of that game with an injury, but I mean, as a whole, you look at that team, especially defensively, and you look at it numerically, they're like, they've been good statistically. Patriots put up 30 on offense on them. Two more came from the safety at the end of the game. We'll start with the offense. Drake May once again was incredible. He threw his first interception since the winning streak started against Carolina. Even before that, against the Steelers. So this is his first interception during their winning streak thus far. 18-24, 282 yards, 3 touchdowns to only 1 interception. That one, I think there was a quote he said that kind of jokingly, I forgot the linebacker could jump, Schwesinger. He looked really good out there. He had a couple phenomenal throws, obviously, offensively at the beginning of the game. Only 9 first half points, but that last drive in the first half that led to the field goal that came after a long catch from Booty on 3rd and 23, I think it was a really, really nice play that led to that extra 3 to go into the half with the lead. And then 21 third quarter points is phenomenal. So Kayshawn Booty caught another deep ball. So that was obviously nice to see. That was where one of Drake's touchdowns came from. Stephon Diggs catching another one that was his first touchdown as a Patriot. And then Hunter Henry caught one and walked into the end zone. So those are the 3 touchdown catchers there. Hunter Henry, his touchdown was his only catch of the game. So I'm sure fantasy owners going into that game, if you said, hey, Hunter Henry's going to have 1 catch, you're not so happy. But he salvages it a little bit with the touchdown. Diggs only 3 catches for 14 yards, but one of those was for that touchdown. I think the thing that surprised a lot of people, including myself, for good reason, Matt Collins, 7 catches, 89 yards. I think he only had 12 catches on the year going into this game. So he was definitely, I think, more of an afterthought for the Browns, and rightfully so. He's been mainly a blocking guy. He's lined up as a tight end a little bit, as a third tight end, as a blocker. So he's definitely had utility in the offense, but I wouldn't say he's been, you know, some star. Kayshawn Booty, 75 yards again. I'm going to look up his stats right now as I'm talking right now. So 431 yards, it looks like. Is that correct? 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, sometimes the Google stats can be a little weird. So 431, let's divide that by 8 and multiply it by 17. He's on pace for 915 yards this year. If you had told me that, you know, mid last year after his rookie year, I would have called you crazy. If you remember, he had 2 catches his rookie year. Did not look like the future was very bright for him. But he's found a phenomenal niche as this deep ball guy who is a phenomenal tracker of the football, despite not being, you know, one of these guys that has really elite top-end speed. Pop Douglas had 1 catch on the day, but that one for 44 is a catch and run in the first half. So I think as a whole, you know, you look at what this team has put together. Austin Hooper had a nice couple of catches, 2 for 38. He had 1, you know, long one over the seam. I think you look at the receivers in general, and we'll get into it in a little bit. We talked a little bit about this last week too, about guys that could potentially add. There's been another name that's kind of come up in NFL circles recently, and there's plenty of trade news actually about the Patriots. Yesterday they made 2 trades, which we'll get into also a little bit later in the show. But I think it's interesting, you know, to see a group of receivers that talent-wise, with the exception of Diggs, I don't think going into this year you felt particularly great about the receivers. And even Diggs coming off that ACL tear. So you know, you look at it, you say, all right, Stephon Diggs, we've got a guy there who we think, if he can get back to his best, great. And that's kind of what he's been back to being a very good player, a very productive player this year. But then after that, you're looking at it, you say, Kayshon Boutte, okay, he's young at least. Pop Douglas, he's got some upside, but he's, you know, he's a slot exclusive guy. Diggs likes to occupy that slot too. Matt Collins, veteran, special teams guy, all right, whatever. But as a whole, and especially if you told me, you know, Kyle Williams was going to have two catches to this point in the year, I wouldn't, you know, be super thrilled with the receivers' performances. But it's worked. Hollins has overperformed in this game. Well, Hollins did overperform in this game. Kayshon Boutte's overperformed throughout the year. As we just mentioned, he's on pace for 915 yards, which isn't far off 1,000. If you told me Kayshon Boutte was going to have 1,000 yards, I'd say you're crazy. So he's kind of almost... not stylistically, he's not exactly the same, but as far as how he's used and what his final production goes, it's very Jamison Williams-esque, where it's, hey, we're not going to have you as a regular part of the offense in, you know, these shallow cross sort of plays that they've given to the Hunter Henrys of the world, the Stephon Diggses of the world, the Pop Douglases of the world, but him and Matt Collins, too, to a degree, have been used more as deep threats. So Boutte averaged 25 yards a catch on Sunday. Obviously had that deep touchdown. So, the receiving core has been, I think, a lot better than most people would have expected. So that's been really, really nice to see. And then the ground game, right? So here's the thing. Ramondre Stevenson continues to struggle, right? 2.4 a carry this game, 14 for 34 on the ground, no touchdowns. It isn't great, but they found ways to get production out of other guys. So three guys averaged 7 yards or more per carry. And that was Travion Henderson, Drake May, and Terrell Jennings. So we'll start with Drake May, just because we already kind of spoke about him briefly. He's a phenomenal scrambler. I don't think you need me or anyone else to tell you that. You know, he's showed that a lot last year, averaged over 7 yards a carry, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was 7.8 a carry last year. I can fact check that too. But he's been a phenomenal, he's just been a phenomenal rusher. Through two seasons. And last year, it was more out of necessity. He kind of had to be. 7.8 a carry, 54 carries for 521 yards on the year last season through 13 games. 10 of those games he started and finished. Through 8 games this year, he's 51 carries for 250 yards, 4.9 a carry, 2 touchdowns. So, you know, a little bit less as far as yards per carry goes, but he's also, you know, I think he's been a little bit more conservative with his rushing and isn't being as rash with some of his some of the hits he's taking. So I think that's been good to see. I think, you know, when you look at what he was able to do this game, he had a phenomenal play where the whole pocket collapses. The Browns brought probably 7, 8, maybe 9 guys even. I don't think it was 9. Maybe probably 7 or 8 guys. And he ducks through and escapes for a first down. And I was like, that's exactly what I want to see my quarterback do. And then he slides to the end. It was a little bit awkward, but slides to the end, gets down. And you look at it and you say, hey, like, that's what I want my quarterback to do. So I thought, yeah, seven carries, 50 yards on Sunday. He looked really, really good there. 7.1 a carry. It's hard to complain about that. Obviously that was very encouraging to see. The top yards getter for running backs, I don't want to say top rusher because that could imply, we're talking about carries, but Travion Henderson, 10 carries, 75 yards, had the fumble at the end, which was a little bit disappointing. But when we talk about Travion Henderson, we're talking about a guy who is the ultimate boomer bust player, right? There were times out there where it looked like he'd catch the little sweep, he'd catch the handoff, he'd take the handoff and, you know, it's -3 and -5, whatever it would be. And then you had a couple carries out there that go for, you know, 10, 15, 20 plus. And you're like, oh, wow, we might have something there. So definitely inconsistent from Henderson, you know, an elite second and one back. I'll say that, you know, one of those sort of free plays where you've got the flexibility to try, you know, try to hit a big play. Henderson's probably your guy for that. I find it hard to believe he'll be given the full-time running back role at any point this year, unless Ramondre's fumbling issues persist. He just, in general, can't really run between the tackles at a very high rate for as good of an athlete as he is. So I think with him, it's just going to be about continuing to develop. I think that's been promising to see. The Patriots have an extra roster spot, which I think is almost guaranteed to be filled by Terrell Jennings. We'll get into why they have that extra roster spot in a little while here. But Terrell Jennings, 2 carries for 15 yards, 7.5 a carry. One was a little bit of a shorter one, and one he burst off for, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 yards. So, yeah, I think Jennings is kind of exactly what you need as a third running back. He's a younger guy. He's only a second year in the league. Spent last year with the practice squad for the most part. I think he had 13 carries for 33 yards last season, if I'm not mistaken. So it wasn't anything particularly impressive. This past offseason, he was battling with Len Larris and the undrafted rookie out of UC Davis, who was so productive in college, especially in that final year. I think he had upwards of 2,300 yards between rushing and receiving. He ended up landing on IR, unfortunately, so we didn't get to see any of him in the regular season. But Jennings, I think, he's offered you, you know, a guy other than Henderson and Stevenson who's shown he can tote the rock a little bit. So I think that's been something that you have to like to see. Yeah, I thought that was super, super encouraging. And I think overall, you know, given the Browns aren't some incredible team, but I'll also say, I think, you know, when to win in the NFL, you need a stable passing offense, which Drake May has provided, and then some. I saw today he's second, tied for second in MVP odds, I think right now, behind Patrick Mahomes. So he's been incredible. I don't think anybody, you know, believes that more than us Patriots fans, that he should win MVP. But the running game it's steadily gotten better. It's still not great, but it's definitely improving compared to where it was towards the beginning of the season. Obviously less fumbles is a huge piece to that. And we're not fumbling the ball so much anymore. So that's been good to see. So even though the yards per carry hasn't really been there, we've at least had a guy in Henderson and Stevenson at different points who, you know, Stevenson more so last week, Henderson more so this week, who have been able to, you know, do a solid job, you know, as far as yards per carry goes. So Henderson gets the plaudits for this week. Obviously the fumble is a little bit disappointing at the end there, but 7.5 a carry this week is spectacular on 10 carries, 10 for 75 was his final stat line. And then Stevenson last week, I think it was 18 for 88, I want to say. So a nice performance for him too. So obviously good to see. The Browns were shut down across the board. Dylan Gabriel, 2 interceptions. He didn't have an interception going into this game. He threw his first 2 career interceptions. Jaylen Hawkins, unbelievable play from him. One-handed catch on a deep bomb. Really, really good stuff from Jaylen Hawkins. He's having one of his best career years. We'll get a little bit deeper into the safeties in a little bit with Kyle Duggars being traded on Tuesday. But yeah, and then the other interception was from Robert Spillane. Spillane I thought was incredible this game. I can't really sing his praises enough. I thought beginning of the season, I thought in the Raiders game he didn't look great. I thought against Miami, I think he tied his highest ever number for missed tackles in a game. I think he missed 5 tackles in that game, which is, you know, obviously not what you want to see from a linebacker paying $12 million a year. He has been lights out as far as, particularly in run defense. He's been so, so good over the past couple weeks. So that's been really, really nice to see. I'm curious. I'm going to take a look here at his PFF numbers. 90.9 run defense grade. 60.5 coverage grade is 29th among 80 out of 80 linebackers. But his run defense grade, 30 among everyone. So I'm actually curious to see who the two guys over him are, because that's a pretty impressive figure. But yeah, it's been so nice. Obviously, guys like Jawan Bentley in the past, Jelani Tavai, I looked at him and I said, yeah, this is really good. I like what we're seeing out of the linebackers, whatever. But I think that, you know, what we're seeing out of Spillane is a next level sort of ability. So the top two guys right now are Jack Campbell of the Detroit Lions and Fred Warner, who's on IR now with an injury. Those are the only two players that are above Robert Spillane as far as PFF run defense grade. The only players with a 90-plus grade at linebacker are Jack Campbell, Fred Warner, Robert Spillane, DeMario Davis, Bobby Wagner, and then Cedric Gray, the young player for the Titans. So really good company to be in. Landon Roberts, former Patriot, in there at 8, which is pretty impressive. But yeah, I think as a whole, you look at it and you say, hey, like, you know, we hit on a lot of these free agent additions. I think Milton Williams has been really, really good. I think we've got Robert Spillane in the middle there, who's been awesome. So yeah, and it's just been really nice to see, you know, a lot of these guys just play so well. So that's been really, really good to see. I think, you know, obviously holding the Browns to 13 isn't, you know, anything to really celebrate too much, just given, I mean, obviously it's a good performance, but the Browns offense is pretty poor. Bottling up Quinshon Judkins, though, is, I think, an important piece. So 9 for 19 yards, 2.1 a carry. Judkins did get hurt. I haven't heard anything else about any injuries he might have had. Harold Fannin led the Browns in receiving, 6 for 62 and a touchdown. David Njoku, 4 for 37 and a touchdown as their second option receiver. I thought Jamari Thrash, even though he had two catches for 31 yards, I thought he actually made a play or two out there. Jerry Jeudy, I don't think, Jerry Jeudy and Isaiah Bond, zeros across the board for them. Jeudy did play. I was going to say he didn't play. I was getting him confused with Calvin Ridley the week before. So yeah, I think you have to feel pretty good about the, you know, just pass defense in general. Obviously, Fannin broke a play in the first quarter to give the Browns the lead. Browns were leading after the first quarter. As weird as that sounds, 7-3. But Njoku had a catch, little seam catch, where it looked like Craig Woodson tried to jump the route, unable to do so. But and then the 2-point conversion, they targeted Marcus Jones. We're looking for Harold Fannin in the back of the end zone. Jones able to break it up. So. Nice play from him there. Who he obviously got an extension. That's a third piece that we'll talk about. We'll talk about the two trades and the extension in a little bit. But yeah, I think just as a whole, really, really good job from the Patriots defense. You know, like I said, the Browns aren't a team that you should, you know, be celebrating like a win over, like it's the Super Bowl. But you still got to win games in the NFL. You got to, you know, play who's in front of you. I will say, just as a side note. They did just about anything, everything they could to help Will Campbell with Myles Garrett, but that man is a force of nature. 5 sacks in one game. He was unreal. I actually thought Alex Wright, the UAB product, showed a lot too. He's a giant, giant human. So the Browns, I mean, defensively, they're good. They've got it. They're trying to chip Myles Garrett with Hunter Henry, and nothing was working. So I saw a report today that said it's more likely to win the lottery than, you know, see the Browns trade Garrett. So. Yeah, I don't think that any trades with him are going to happen, but it would be incredible if the Patriots could find a way to get on their hands on a pass rusher like that. Because as much as I love the Harold Landrys, the Robert Spillane, or the Caleb Von Chasons, the Anthony Jennings of the world, you know, they're not Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett is a real force of nature. So, you know, the Browns have themselves a really good defense led by an unbelievable player. So, yeah, Myles Garrett's unstoppable, but. Yeah, we can kind of move on now. I think we've kind of exhausted our talk about the Browns. We'll talk about the Falcons, the upcoming Falcons game, but we're going to kind of take an intermission between the games to just look at the trades the Patriots made. On Tuesday, the Patriots made two trades. They're identical in terms of compensation. They gave up Keon White and a 7th-round pick for a 6th-round pick back from the 49ers, gave up Kyle Duggar and a 7th-round pick to get a 6th-round pick back from the Steelers. So... You know, I actually, we'll start with the Duggar trade because my feelings on the Duggar trade are a lot more clear. I give this trade like an A+. Duggar is essentially a free agent next year because the Steelers reworked his deal, so he's a free agent at the end of the season. So it's essentially, you know, there's really nothing as far as a, you know, long-term commitment is concerned for the Steelers. So Patriots will take on a little bit of dead money next year. We'll take on most of his contract remaining for this season, but 2 years from now, he was on the books for upwards of $18 million, I think, and the Patriots clear that all off. So, obviously good to get a guy who was backing up Craig Woodson, the rookie, and a veteran in Jalen Hawkins, who was on, you know, such a giant contract. It's good to get that off the books. So, yeah, I think that's a really, really nice move for the sake of cap. So, that's been really, really good. I think also, you know, you just look at it and say, hey, stylistically, you're not really what we need. They released Jabril Peppers, who also went to the Steelers. So Jabril Peppers and Kyle Duggar will now be Steelers. But stylistically, if you look at it, Jalen Hawkins has played deep almost the entire year, as has Craig Woodson. They're both playing 60%+ of their snaps in the deep part of the field. So they definitely like that split safety look, and they want to rely more on the Robert Spillanes, the Christian Ellis, the Jelani Tavai of the world. Even Marty Mapu is more of a Tampa 2 linebacker to you know, manage the box more so, as that's what you're paid to do as a linebacker. You don't want to, you know, I think the philosophy for a while was we don't pay linebackers, or we pay linebackers minimal amounts, and we, you know, have safeties who we can move to linebacker. And that ended up with having, you ended up having a bunch of safeties who just weren't very good in coverage. You had Peppers, who wasn't great in coverage. You had Duggar, who wasn't great in coverage. Mapu was originally drafted to be a safety. So you had a lot of guys who weren't particularly productive as safeties being moved into the box as linebackers. So I think that was a little bit frustrating for fans to see. It definitely frustrated me, you know, over the past couple of years, just seeing a guy like Duggar get paid and continually not perform. So obviously, I would have been fine with them cutting him. There was a report that he wouldn't be on the roster after the trade deadline if he were to not be traded. And it looks like now you say, hey, look, we can move up around in the draft by trading that seventh for seventh and Duggar for a sixth. So we move up around, get a little bit of value, and most importantly, dump that contract. So good stuff from the management to be able to get rid of that Duggar deal. The other trade they made, Keon White. So Keon White is a little bit of a different story than Duggar, but I think that it is also a worthwhile trade more than anything, because I think that Keon White probably would have gotten really frustrated with what's going on in New England. What's going on in New England for him is not, or was not very much, because he wasn't really playing. He was a healthy scratch this past week against the Browns. That, to me, kind of spelled the end for him. I just think the issue is you've got a lot of guys on the defensive line who were invested in by Vrabel, right? On the edge, you've got Harold Landry, you've got Kalavon Chaisson, and you've got Elijah Ponder, the UDFA. So even though if he might not be better than White, obviously that's someone they like. And then on the inside, you've got Barmore, who you're already paying, even though he wasn't an investment by Vrabel, and Barmore has looked really good this year. Milton Williams, obviously, you know, your highest paid player in franchise history in terms of average annual contract value. And the fact that Vrabel invested in him. So your two interior guys there. Then you've got Josh Farmer and Kyrus Tonga, who were both added by Vrabel. Tonga via free agency, who's been excellent, and Farmer via the draft. And then you've got a guy like Corey Durden, even, who was a, you know, a claim at the end of camp. And he's looked really good too. So I think you've got a bunch of guys who clearly, you know, can play. And I just think with White, he was kind of one of those guys where it seemed like he was kind of getting phased out anyway, as unfortunate as it is. Anthony Jennings looked like that guy originally that was going to get phased out, but you know, I think people view him as a really high character guy. He's a little bit more flexibility, where early in his career, he played more of a stand up linebacker role. Then they moved him to the edge and he looked a lot better. This past week, he looked excellent. So I think that you're going to want to continue to utilize Anthony Jennings in most every way you can. So, yeah, I think you look at Jennings and you like what you see there. And I think it's either Jennings or White for who you keep on the roster. And I think White probably had a little bit more value than Jennings did. Given if Jennings got traded, I can't imagine they'd get much more or much less than a sixth and seventh round pick swap. So, you know, you've got something there with the defensive line. I just think with White, I have very little doubt he'll work out in San Francisco. I just think right now you've got a really crowded edge room of guys that aren't spectacular, but definitely aren't bad either. And I think White is just too in the middle of that and just happens to also have value. He's also a little bit older for a rookie. I think he's 26, or not for a rookie, he was older as a rookie, but he's a little bit older now, even as a third-year player. Keon White is, so Keon White's 26. How old is Christian Gonzalez for context here? Christian Gonzalez is 23, so he's 3 years younger. They were the same draft class. So I think, you know, you go out and you say, hey, let's stockpile some, you know, slightly higher picks through the Duggar trade, through the Keon White trade, and just say, hey, you know, can we, you know, use those sixth-round picks to maybe go out and get a receiver who's disgruntled? Can we get a running back who's disgruntled? Can we fortify the offensive line a little bit more? You know, do we even want to go get a different edge rusher who's a little bit more experienced? An extra corner? There's a lot of directions you could go with this. And I think just, you know, retaining those picks gives you a little bit more flexibility. The other big move the Patriots made, Marcus Jones extended 3 years, $36 million, $12 million a year. Huge fan of this deal. So your corners now are all locked up contractually for after this season. It'll be 2 more years of this trio together. Now, will the trio actually make it through that amount of time? We'll see. Christian Gonzalez, I think every fan hopes that he will be on this team till the day he retires. That guy is spectacular. Marcus Jones, obviously, just re-signed him. He's an incredible punt returner. You know, you got to hope he'll be the slot corner for the foreseeable future. I think the only guy there's still some questions about is Carlton Davis. I think with Davis, it's just a matter of, you know, how can we maximize what he showed last year in Detroit, which was some pretty solid corner play. As the corner two, he hasn't looked great this year. I think in terms of yards allowed, it hasn't been that bad. But I think at the same time, you're at this position, you're at this point where you're looking for a little bit more for a guy who's, you know, you've spent, you know, $60 million over 3 years to get him to New England. So I think that's a little bit of a disappointing reality that he hasn't been, you know, as good as people would have hoped. But I think at the same time, you're still in a position where you can look at it and say, hey, like, you know, we've got Christian Gonzalez, who's an incredible player on a rookie deal. We've got Marcus Jones, whose rookie deal won't kick, who's still in his rookie deal until the end of this year. So we've got a little bit of flexibility there. And, you know, we'll see. I don't think Carlton Davis will get cut at the end of the year. But if that is a decision they make, that'll be something to talk about when we get closer to the offseason. But, yeah, I think right now you've got three corners who can play. I think Jones is right now the second best of the three, and I think he's absolutely deserving of the contract. He's a total game changer on special teams. $12 million is a more than fair contract, I feel, for him. I, you know, suggested an article pretty recently he'd get something a little bit less than that. I think I said maybe $9 million, but I have no issue with him being paid $12 million. So, yeah, I think, you know, as far as the great teams go, the great teams do have, you know, really good slot corners, and that's what Marcus Jones is. So it's really good to see from a draft class that featured Cole Strange, Tyquan Thornton, Jack Jones, Pierre Strong, a lot of these guys that just did nothing for the Patriots or in the NFL in general. It's good to hear that, you know, see that Marcus Jones is becoming one of those premier slot corners. I think he became the third highest paid slot corner in football behind, I want to say, Jalen Petrie of the Texans. And there was one other, I don't remember who off the top of my head. But that was, yeah, I mean, I think it's more than worthwhile. I'm going to fact check this too. It was Petrie and someone else. It's definitely good to see, though, that the Patriots are in a position where they can actually, you know, make a move for, you know, to retain one of their better players. It was Kyler Gordon was the other guy. So Kyler Gordon's getting paid 13.3. Jalen Petrie's making 13 even. And then Marcus Jones making 12. So he's earned his money. He's earned his money. He earned his stripes, earned his money. So you got to feel really good for Marcus Jones and what he's been able to do. So, yeah, I think it's been good all around. We'll touch on trade target really quick, too. We did a couple last week. We talked about a few guys. The new name that's kind of come up a little bit has been Rashid Shaheed. I can't imagine you have to give up more than maybe a sixth-round pick for Shaheed. And that's where I think those sixth-round picks that you got for Duggar and White could come in handy. I think the issue right now, and I kind of talked about this last week with the potential for adding Tyler Lockett, who recently just signed to Vegas' practice squad. I think the tough thing about Lockett, or about Shaheed, is that he would, I think, disrupt, just like any receiver would, unless you're getting one of those top guys, disrupt sort of the hierarchy of the depth receivers. And what I mean by that is they're playing so, so well right now. And I don't think there's much doubt that the receiver group come the offseason is going to need, you know, they're going to need to do some tinkering there and find another guy who can be one of those truly transcendent players to pair with Diggs. So I think that, you know, you're definitely going to need to make upgrades. But Shaheed, for half a season, is that going to be enough to put you in a position where you feel like you're in a really, really good spot with that? And I'm a huge Shaheed guy, right? I'm a big fan of what he offers. A lot of speed, offers something in the return game as a punt returner and kick returner. To me, though, it's just a little bit tough, right? Because you look at it, you say, Kayshon Booty's been a phenomenal deep threat this year. You've already got sort of your high-volume guy in Diggs. You've got Mac Hollins and Pop Douglas as your depth guys. And then I don't think you want to move on from Efton Chisholm, obviously. Kyle Williams, a third-round pick, and I'm moving on from him. So, yeah, I mean, if you wanted to make a move for Shaheed, I wouldn't mind it. I just think that you're in a spot, though, where you're kind of, you know, where I think a move for Shaheed would be more appropriate for a team that needed a more true deep threat. And I think Booty's been a true deep threat to this point. So if they trade for him, I will not have much reservations to say that I like the trade. I just think it's a little bit awkward in that where exactly does he fit in the depth chart? And if you add a talented player, Shaheed's a talented player, I don't think you're going to find an issue finding a place for him to play. He went to Weber State, the same place Damian Lillard went. I want to take a look. What are his stats? Yeah, so Shaheed in his rookie year, 488 yards as an undrafted rookie. His next year, 719 yards and 5 touchdowns. So that's a really impressive stat line right there. So then last year, he only played 6 games, had 349 yards. So I'm always curious about this. We're going to divide it by 6, multiply it by 17. He was on pace for 988 yards last year. So I think that, you know, he's continuously gotten to be a more productive deep threat. He's 27. I personally would really like to see them add, you know, someone to the offense, whether it's a tight end or a receiver. We talked about David Njoku last week a little bit because they run 2 tight end sets so much. Running back would be another place that I think would be pretty appealing to add a guy, given Ramondre's fumble issues and Travion Henderson's inconsistency. But yeah, I mean, I think the main guy right now, as far as a trade candidate would go, just around the league, is Rishi Shaheed. I think Jakobi Meyers is another guy that would be interesting. But yeah, I think Shaheed is probably, you know, the guy that most people are talking about right now, given that, you know, the reports are kind of just coming out now that he could be available. So Shaheed would be really interesting. Jakobi Meyers, I just mentioned briefly, but he would obviously, that return would be fun. But I'm kind of talking myself into Shaheed a little bit, though. I like the idea of having, you know, two guys with top end, you know, deep threat ability, Booty through kind of his ball tracking and Shaheed through just his pure speed. And once again, I mentioned it earlier, just offering another option in the kick return game, too. I do kind of like that. So we'll keep an eye out for any more trades that the Patriots might make. We'll kind of get into the last big piece that I want to get into here is their game against the Atlanta Falcons. So last week, Atlanta, that was pretty disappointing from them. I don't think, you know, most people expected, even with Kirk Cousins coming in, them to get battered by the Dolphins like that. Atlanta's pass defense is phenomenal. Their offense is, for whatever reason, just not very good, which is kind of surprising. They have 4 guys who are picked in the top 8. Michael Penix was number 8, Bijan Robinson was number 8, Drake London was number 8, Kyle Pitts was number 4 in their respective drafts. So you've got a lot of talent in your skill positions and quarterback that have all those players have been invested in very recently. You know, Tyler Allgeier is obviously another guy who's very productive. Even Jamal Agnew, I'm not sure if they use him on offense. They don't. He doesn't have a catch this year. But Agnew's, you know, a productive player in the return game. Jake Matthews, an experienced left tackle, another former top 8 pick. He was the 6th pick out of A&M. So, yeah, you've got a lot of guys on offense. Chris Lindstrom, the BC guy, phenomenal guard. He was the 14th pick in the draft. I don't think I realized he, you know, went that early. But, yeah, you've got a bunch of guys on this offense who, you know, you would think based off the names that they'd be a lot more productive than the 28th offense in the league, 28th ranked offense in the league. But they haven't been at this point. And to be fair, their depth isn't great right now. Your wide receivers are Drake London, Darnell Mooney, and David Sills. David Sills has 3 catches on the year. Cardarrelle Hodge is the receiver 4, then Casey Washington. So, yeah, it's not, you know, an exceptional group. You do rely a lot on you know, Bijan Robinson to make that offense tick, and I think teams have realized that and honed in on Bijan a little bit more over the past 2 weeks. That's why he's had 65 rushing yards over the last 2 weeks. So I think it's been, you know, a little bit disappointing to see his lack of production over the past couple of weeks if you're Atlanta, but I think that's something the Patriots could take advantage of. One thing they did a really good job of last week is, you know, Quinshon Judkins is the heart and soul of that Browns offense. And they also like to throw the ball to their tight ends a lot. And I think Atlanta is in a similar boat. The Patriots did a really good job, like I was saying, last week with, you know, bottling up Quinshon Judkins. They haven't allowed a 50-plus yard rusher this year. James Cook was the best with 49 yards when they played the Bills, but they haven't allowed someone to creep into that 50 range. So that's been really, really nice to see so far. Obviously, you got to hope that continues, because if it does, I don't think they'll have much trouble with this game. I mean, you look at it, I think it's going to be Christian Gonzalez and Drake London matched up. Bijan Robinson, you're obviously just going to want to bottle him up, and Algier too. Nathan Carter's their RB3. And he averages 6.7 yards a carry, only 9 carries on the year, but he actually out-carried Algier, or out-rushed Algier, rather, last week. So we'll see. Michael Penix and Drake London, at the time of recording, it's Wednesday. I'm actually not sure if either of them practiced today. We're going to take a look at that. So it says that Raheem Morris says that Penix is slated to participate in the walkthroughs on Wednesday. Drake London is in the same boat. So I'd assume both of them will play. In the event they don't, that just makes the game this much easier, given how poor Atlanta was last week. But I think kind of the keys to the game are just saying, hey, you know, Christian Gonzalez, go one-on-one, follow Drake London around, assuming he plays, and, you know, lock him up, and then bottle up Bijan. Tight ends have kind of beaten up the Patriots a little bit this year. Tommy Tremble, Taysom Hill, David Njoku, Harold Fannin, definitely all had touchdowns. You also had Dalton Kincaid, Brock Bowers go for over 100 yards each. So that's been something that's kind of hurt you. Kyle Pitts is the type of guy that can hurt you. Elite speed down the seam, even though he hasn't been, you know, the player I think a lot of people hoped he would be when he was selected number 4 overall. Back in 21. But I think, you know, as a whole, you look at it and you say, hey, if Kyle Pitts is truly going to be the guy that beats us, we're more okay with that than Drake London or Bijan Robinson beating us. Because I don't think that Kyle Pitts beating the Patriots is going to be a formula for Atlanta to win. Kayla McGarry, their former first-round pick at right tackle, is on IR. Elijah Wilkinson will start at right tackle, the former UMass player. Defensively, the pass defense has been really, really good. You've got Xavier Watts, who they traded up for in the 3rd round, I think it was. Let me fact check that. Yep, 3rd round, 96th overall. He's paired with Jesse Bates, who's an incredible player in the defensive backfield. A.J. Terrell, Billy Bowman, and then another former first-round pick in Mike Hughes, who was a first-round pick by the Vikings, spent some time with the Chiefs, now with Atlanta. That's those are their 3 corners. 2 first-round picks from this past draft, Jalen Walker and James Pierce, will play. Jalen Walker is questionable. Pierce, no injury designation for him. We'll have to see. Is there any news on Jalen Walker? Let's take a look. I didn't even know he was hurt right about now. Let's take a look. It looks like Jalen Walker may return. So we're not 100% sure. He may return on Sunday. We're not 100% sure about that yet. Zach Harrison, their leading sack getter, is questionable as well. So there's a lot of guys whose, you know, play fate on Sunday is kind of up in the air for Atlanta. It's going to be another kind of tough slug it out sort of game, I'd expect. You look at it, you say, hey, Atlanta offensively isn't great. They actually remind me a little bit of a more talented Browns, where it says, hey, our defense is really, really excellent. Our offense is, you know, either in the Browns' case, the offense is just poor. In Atlanta's case, they're kind of underperforming. They don't mesh as well as they might. They probably should. They've scored over 22 points only twice all year, when they played the Bills when they played the Commanders. So they're not a particularly potent offense. I think the big thing for them is just going to be looking at it and say, Bijan, we need to handle you. Drake London, let's cover you with Christian Gonzalez, and let's force a Kyle Pitts to beat us, right? If Kyle Pitts can really beat you that bad with Jalen Hawkins slash Craig Woodson on him, maybe even Alex Austin gets some reps because he's a bigger guy, because I can't imagine 5'8 Marcus Jones is going to be on 6'6 Kyle Pitts. It just doesn't seem like a smart idea. I think you're going to be in a spot where you're looking at it and you say, hey, let's just play our game and do what we can to win this one. I think as a whole, it looks good. If I'm not mistaken, the Patriots are favored by 5.5, I want to say. I'm going to do some fact checking here on this one. Let's take a look. Atlanta. So the Patriots are favored by 5.5. That essentially just means, are they going to win by a touchdown? I do think they're going to win. Home game for them, which is big. Like I've said time and time again over the last couple minutes, contain Bijan, you're going to win this game, I think, pretty easily. I don't have a ton of confidence in Michael Penix as my quarterback if I'm Atlanta or if I'm, you know, a New England fan looking in. So I would take Atlanta, or I would take New England to beat Atlanta. I'm going to say they win by 10. I'm going to say this is there was more scoring than I would have thought last week. I'm going to say that this week I'm going to make the appropriate adjustment. I'm going to say the Patriots win this game. I'm going to give New England 24 for this one. I'm going to say they win 24-14. I don't think Atlanta's offense is particularly good. I do think their pass defense is good enough, though, to stop New England for a lot of the game, to make this a really kind of a tough game. I think it's going to, like a lot of New England's games, I think it's going to be a really, really kind of a gross start. But I think in the end, they'll kind of settle in. They'll look a lot better. So this should be a fun one. Patriots obviously had an entertaining week. Marcus Jones, big extension there for him, dealing away two guys who were key to the last couple of regimes. Kyle Duggar, a guy who Gerard Mayo and company extended. Keon White, a guy that played 74% of snaps last year with Gerard Mayo. Both of them Bill Belichick picks. Both of them now gone. It's always interesting to look at how coaches change the roster, and you know, a couple of major roster decisions were made over the past few days. The only other piece I wanted to mention, the Patriots did add a player off their practice squad. John Saunders played the majority of the time as a slot corner in college for Ole Miss. Before that, I played for Miami, Ohio, spent a little time with the Dolphins. I think it's not a guy that you look at and you say, this guy's going to be some star for us, but he's still only 24 years old. I think he's got, you know, some upside if they like him there. So he's sort of their Duggar replacement as far as depth safeties go. Richie Grant, also a practice squad, former Falcons draft pick, second round pick in 2021. Was elevated from the practice squad last week, so he could get some more run this week. We'll have to see. But, exciting week for the Patriots. Big week coming up. They have the opportunity to move to 7-2, which would be pretty incredible. I don't think a lot of people would have expected that if you had said that at the beginning of the year. So, obviously, that, I think, makes everyone feel good. Exciting win over the Browns. Exciting week. Exciting game this Sunday. So, big stuff from New England. This has been Graham Talks Pats, and it's been fun chatting with you guys.